Welcome to the Pathway to Purpose podcast, where we bring Christian business leaders into a conversation with great content that's been captured at FCCI conferences and events through the years. And you can always learn more about the ways you can engage with FCCI at fcci.org. We're continuing with the third and final segment of Ken Blanchard's Lead Like Jesus content. But before we hear from Mr. Blanchard, let me welcome Danica Dedman and Nelson Davis into the conversation. And it's great to have you both here.
Great to be here.
Thank you, Ken.
So, Danica, you're the Executive Director of Expansion for Marketplace Chaplains living in Orange County, California. I know you enjoy the time there with your husband, your two boys. You've got a background in financial management and philanthropy and roles with Thrivent Financial, MOPS International, and you're part of the Friday FCCI group. Tell us more about your role with Marketplace Chaplains.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. It has just been a joy to get to know a variety of leaders who are interested in, you know, finding a way to really care for their employees in a new way. And we love to joke that Marketplace Chaplains really is the best kept secret in business. And so I get to step into this role of making sure more people hear about what we do and the opportunity to really enhance and broaden a vision of a caring culture within a company. We know that a lot of employers really have a heart and a vision to care for their people well, yet the structure of their leadership and just their capacity to do so at the depth that people need just creates a need. And so we get to step in to fill that. And so I'm learning a ton about all of the different industries we're in. And I feel like I have not heard of an industry that we don't serve in, which means I learn a lot about the places and routines people have in their work. And so I'm just really honored to get to share the good news of what we do and be involved with groups like FCCI.
Speaking of different industries and all the fun things that you get to be a part of, Nelson's in a great industry, president and founding partner of Analytic Vision, a data and analytic consulting firm living in Atlanta, Georgia. You've been part of the faith-driven community in Atlanta and involved with FCCI groups and events. So, Nelson, share with us a little bit about Analytic Vision and how you were led to launch into this endeavor.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. This is an organization that goes back to 2019 when we first founded it. But God put a vision on my heart in 2018 where I had never thought about being an entrepreneur. And he really kind of opened my eyes to the opportunities to engage the marketplace and really put something on my heart around, you know, we have four boys, my wife and I. And I felt a call to help equip and inspire the next generation of data and technology leaders, which has become the vision of this organization, so that my boys would have people to look up to who could, you know, be leaders worth following as they grow up into the marketplace and steward them as the future comes. And so this organization helps take gifted and talented technical subject matter experts and helps them grow in leadership, in character, in technology, in business. And ultimately has the vision of launching them back out into the marketplace after about 6 to 10 years to be directors of data and VPs of analytics and chief data officers and so forth. And our ultimate heart is really to move the needle in the marketplace on what it looks like to be a leader. And so we play a very infinite game about what we're focused on and chasing that vision. And it's been an honor and it's been amazing. We're 32 people at this season who have come alongside and been a part of what we're doing. And it's amazing to see the life change that's happening with so many of those folks. So thank you for having me.
Well, you're going to enjoy hearing more from Danica and Nelson later in the podcast. But let's hear from Ken Blanchard as he continues to deliver great leadership guidance.
In 2009, we had projected $60 million in our company. And we knew by February, if we did 48, we would be lucky. And so what do most companies do when you're going to go down almost 25%? The top managers get behind closed doors and say, who are we going to let go? But we go to our ethics check before we do anything. And we said, you know, is it legal to let people go? Sure it is. But that's only the first question. Is it fair in a tough economic time for us to let 50 or 60 people go? No. Would we like it published in the local newspaper? No. You know? And so what we do every quarter, we have a meeting with everybody in our company. People come in online and we share the balance sheet. We even bought a company in to teach everybody in the company how to read a balance sheet. Why do you want to read a balance sheet? Because they're our partners. We have a profit sharing program. We also have a give back program where we give a percentage of our profit to everybody equally to give to charities of their choice. We want them to learn about tithing. And so we were celebrating the next month our 30th anniversary at the Hotel Del, a two-day party. We took the first day and brought in a group that Bob Buford's worked with called WildWorks that does large group interventions. And we broke our 300 people into small groups of six or eight at tables. Half of the tables, we asked them to come up with ways that we could cut costs. The other ones, how we could increase revenues. And the suggestions that came were unbelievable. The end of the year, we did $48 million, didn't let go of anybody. And because of everybody's suggestion, including, let's take salary cuts. Why don't we stop backing 401k? You know, our family met, and we said, okay, this year, we don't want to lose money, but we don't have to make a profit. That could save a whole bunch of jobs. And all that is, in other words, what do you do? You can't be ethical if you don't have a set of values. And at Southwest, their value, first of all, is safety because of the business. And then they want everybody to engage in three values every day. One is warrior spirit, which doesn't mean combative, but what they want is if you got a job, do it. That's why they can turn a plane around in 10 or 12 minutes faster than anybody else. Because why? Pilots are in there throwing garbage out with everybody else. They don't say, it's not my job, you know, and all that. Second value is a servant's heart. I've never seen a company with a servant heart as a value. And they hire people on their hearts. And they'll train them skills. They don't want a pilot that can't fly. But Colleen told me a story recently, a big pilot, I think it was from Delta, because they do need new pilots, flew down on Southwest to Dallas for an interview, and the word was he was rude to the staff on the plane. And when he walked in the corporate headquarters, you walk in their corporate, there's a big sign that says, "We the people of Southwest," you know, it's really great. And they have the greatest two gals that are receptionists, and he was rude to them. So one gal called upstairs, said, "A guy coming upstairs for an interview, I don't know what he's here for, but let me tell you how he treated me, and I just got word from the plane about him." They didn't even interview him. They said, maybe this will be helpful to you. But we don't hire great pilots who are not serving human beings. And then their last value is a fun-loving attitude, which is Herb's attitude. A friend of mine was flying with them recently, and the steward got on the microphone and said, this is the last flight of the day, and we're all tired, and we don't have the energy to pass out the peanuts and the potato chips, so we're going to put them on the floor in the front, and as we take off and gain height, they'll come down the aisle. And the plane was a hoot, you know. And one of their customers wrote Colleen and Herb and said, I object to your people fooling around during safety announcements. That's serious stuff. I was on a plane recently. The guy says, if we have to do a water landing, we'll try to get the drinks and the water wings to you as soon as possible. And he said, I think you should talk to these people. That's not right. Most presidents would write back and say, thanks for flying. Here's some coupons. And, you know, I'll talk to the people. Colleen Herb brought back a three-word response. We'll miss you. You know, if you got a set of values, you can decide we'll miss you, see? You know? And that's one of the problems that we have in this country. We ought to tell some people we're going to miss you. Why stop complaining? Why don't you go somewhere else? But if you don't have a set of values, you can't halt people's behavior. And so servant leadership starts with vision and direction. And then you can put goals on and all. And the responsibility is the hierarchy. It doesn't mean you don't involve people. But if you're running a family or an organization or a church without a clear vision, you're in trouble. You know, what do people sign up for? What do people do? You got to do that. What business are you in? You know, what's the picture of the future? What are you doing? You know, and we have a wonderful church. I was with him playing golf yesterday, Thomas, with Miles McPherson and some. Miles got a church, The Rock, and he feels that Jesus said, get out and serve. And he won't let anybody be in his church who isn't part of a ministry. And he said, sure, I'm concerned about Africa, but we got a lot of problems in San Diego. how many millions of hours they gave to the city last year, right? 1.5 million hours and all that. But, you know, it's very clear when you join the Rock what it's all about and what the vision is and the values and all that. So people get excited about it. If people don't want that, they go somewhere else. Nothing wrong with that. Go somewhere else that you can sit around and talk about people, whatever you want to do. And now once you get a clear vision, now you move to the servant part of servant leadership, and now you have to turn the pyramid upside down. When Jesus washed the feet of the disciples, he was moving from vision and direction to implementation. He had a real slow group, you know, so it took him a while for them to really get it. But when he knew he was going to be leaving, he turned the pyramid upside down. It's so interesting. A lot of people say, well, if I become a servant leader, you know, aren't I going to lose my position, power, or anything? No, what did Jesus say? You call me Lord and teacher, rightly so. You know, I mean, so I'm not stepping down from that. But just as I have done for you, I want you to do for others. Which is what? To serve. And what do you do is serve? You try to help people win. And some of you here, you can start leading like Jesus by eliminating some of the absurdity that you have around performance reviews in your company. I won't ask you to put your hand up because it would be too embarrassing. But how many of you are running companies where you have a forced distribution where your managers have to fill forms out on people and screw a certain percentage of them? How many of you go out and hire losers? We lost some of our best losers last year. We need to hire some new ones to fill the low slots, you know? I mean, do you think Jesus believed in a normal distribution curve? No, he said, go and make disciples, what, of all nations? He wants us all to win. Even the axe murderer, he would like him to win, you know? And here you're sitting there, you know, value, and then some people take Jack Welch's thing and have, make your people rank order their people. Get a life. You gotta be ashamed of yourself. That's not any way to be. Jesus said, you will be known as my disciples by how you love each other, not how you sit and judge each other. I wrote another book just to prove it with Gary Ridge, president of WD-40. I'm involved in a couple of master's degree programs, and he was in our program at the University of San Diego, Master of Science in Executive Leadership. We also have a program at Grand Canyon, which is a combination of online and face-to-face, where we really teach people about servant leadership and about it. Because I looked at all the MBA programs and all that kind of stuff, and they don't do two things. Number one, they don't teach anything about leadership. They tuck it into an organizational behavior course. And they want to just impact how people think. They miss their heart. And effective leadership is about impacting your heart. We just had our graduation for Grand Canyon recently, and the students come for 4 days in the beginning of the program and learn about self-knowledge and finding out about themselves and their strengths. And we have them write a vision statement and learning their leadership points of view and all, because most people, lousy leaders, don't know anything about themselves. Then they come for 4 days in the middle and learn about leading others one-on-one in teams. And then the last 4 days they come and learn how to lead an organization, which is different than a team. And we had our graduation ceremony for the group that was just leaving. We had two other cohorts were there too. And I went around to the group and I microphoned and said, tell me what you got out of the program. And half of them cried. And people said, what is this program? This is an executive MBA program? See, what did Jesus want? He wanted to give you a heart attack. He didn't want you to be loving. He wanted to be a loving person. He didn't want you to be honest. He wanted to be an honest person. He wanted to get right inside you there. And I think we forget that when we train people. And I was a college professor for 10 years, and I was always in trouble. I was investigated by some of the best faculty committees. And but the thing that drove the faculty crazy is the first day of class, I always gave out the final examination. They'd say, what are you doing? I say, I'm confused. They say, acted. I said, I thought we were supposed to teach these students. You are, but don't give them the questions in the final. I said, not only am I going to give them the questions in the final, what do you think I'm going to do all semester? I'm going to teach them the answers. Why? So when they get to the final exam, they get A. Life's about getting A's, not some stupid normal distribution curve. Why do you want a certain percentage of your people to lose? Is there anything more absurd than that? And Gary Ridge was in our first cohort at San Diego. He went, duh. Why don't we do that in business? And we wrote a book called How to Win, Help People Win at Work. And the subtitle is a management philosophy called Don't Mark My Paper, Help Me Get an A. Let me just explain to you all, because you all are interested in business, what they do at WD-40. First of all, he had to change the culture, because when he took over as president, everybody was in their silos and nobody was, they were holding on to information. That was power. So you got this image of an Indian tribe and the chief sitting around the fire sharing what he knew with the young squaws and the young braves. And he went all around the world, there in 60 nations, and said, would you like to be part of the WD-40 tribe? And people said, God, it's a great idea. So now every manager is called a tribe leader, and their people report to them are tribe members. But at the beginning of every fiscal year, every tribe leader sits one-on-one with every tribe member, and they look over their job description, and they say, is this job description still appropriate for their job if they've been in it for one? If they're brand new, they share it with them and say, is there any questions you have, or is anything in here you think shouldn't be, and all. And they agree on the job descriptions. And then they set 4 or 5 observable, measurable goals, 2 of which have to impact the bottom line, the organizational goals, because first the organizational goals are out, because the organization wants to survive and wants to perform well. And so what they do is they agree on goals and objectives, and they have a report card that everybody has, like we used to have in school. It's first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, overall performance. And they write in their 4 or 5 observable, measurable goals for that. And what's really interesting is that they get together with everybody one-on-one once a quarter. And the first item of agenda between a tribe leader and tribe member is the final exam still relevant? Because you know what? A lot of organizations, number one, don't set goals. I'm always amazed. You know, all good performance starts with clear goals. If people don't know what you want them to do, what's the chances of them doing it? Duh, not very good. I mean, even Alice learned that in Alice in Wonderland, didn't she? Gets to the fork in the road, asks that fool Cheshire Cat, which road should I take? He said, where are you going? She said, I don't know. He said, it doesn't matter. See, so a lot of people, though, if they do set goals, what do? They file them. Until when? The end of the year. Somebody's got a performance review. Everybody's running around trying to find the goals, you know. But they haven't looked at them since. And they might have had a tsunami, all kinds of things. The goals might not even be appropriate. We're still evaluating people on the same goals. And all, which is just crazy. So they can change the final exam all the way up to the beginning of the fourth quarter. And after they answer that question, then you'll love this. At WD-40, people only fill out one performance review, their own. Why are you having your manager sit there with all these forms? That's so stupid. Why don't you have the people fill out the form? Then the job of the manager is to agree or disagree. They're supposed to be partners. And what they also do, which is really powerful, is they meet one-on-one with each of their direct reports for 15 to 30 minutes once every 2 weeks. The manager's responsible for setting the meeting up, and the agenda is the tribe member's agenda. If you met with your people 26 times a year for 15 to 30 minutes, do you think you'd know what they're doing and you'd be able to help them where they... Some people say, I don't have time. Well, get a life. Go be an individual contributor. Stop having a... If you don't have time to meet with your kids, put them up for adoption. You know? You know, I mean, it's ridiculous, you know? People don't have time for their kids, you know? Come on. You know what love is to kids? It's spelled T-I-M-E. And I told the group this morning that Peter Drucker told me one time, nothing good happens by accident. You know, put some structure on it. You know, take one kid on a trip with you this month. Take another kid with you the next month. You know, have date night at least once every 2 weeks with your wife where you can't talk about anything but your relationship. Put some structure on some things. That's what they do in WD-40. You got to meet with your people. If you can't meet them face to face, you talk to them on the phone. How's it going? Is there anything I can do to help? Duh. You know? And what they do in their report card is they give themselves an A, a B, a C, or an L. You know what's L? I'm still learning, so I shouldn't be evaluated. And what they do is, what Gary's finding, some people have been at other companies, so they give themselves high scores initially because they hear they'll knock you down always. No, and this they say, let's look at the data because it's observable and measurable. You know, maybe, you think that maybe is a little high? Yeah, probably is. Some people give themselves lower scores than they should, and you got to build them up. But it's a dialogue, and both of them know what the data is because you should have anybody in another department could look at somebody you give an A and say, gee, I would give an A to that because they had this kind of performance goal. If you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And don't evaluate your people on stupid stuff like initiative, promotability. I mean, what does that mean? They all suck up the hierarchy, you know, because if they have a good relationship, they think they get a better score. You know, anything you want them to do has got to be measurable. Suppose you want people to have good initiative. What does that mean? Well, what I want from you is at least 3 suggestions a month on how we can improve this department. They might say, well, 3, that would be 36 for the year. Well, what do you want to go for, 20? I mean, you know, but let's agree on something so somebody knows what a good creativity or initiative score is. If you can't measure it, you can't manage it and all. And so what they've done at WD-40 is create an environment where it's the job of the manager, once the goals are set, which is the leadership part of servant leadership. Now, who does the tribe leaders work for? Their people. What are they supposed to do? Help them win. If the people accomplish the goals, do you think WD-40 wins? Yes. In 2010, I was telling the group before, they had the best financial year in the history of the company. And they have an internal employee satisfaction they sent out every 18 months. And they sent it out. You know what percentage of people filled the form out? 98%. If you know anything about internal surveys, if you get 50%, you're lucky. And I was telling the group, the highest rated question, 98.7 people said, at WD-40, I'm treated with respect and dignity. 98.5 said, at WD-40, I am clear on what good performance looks like. 98.4 said, at WD-40, I'm getting the help I need to be a good performer. Does everybody get an A? Not necessarily, because some people are in the wrong job. I mean, if you made me vice president of finance and I had the greatest supervisor in the world, I would fail. I hate numbers. We have a board of directors, and they give me permission to fall asleep during the financial reports. You know, I've never written a check. Margie writes all the checks. She's got all the money. Margie's got a lawyer, a financial advisor, and all. And, you know, once in a while I'll say, how are we doing? She says, fine, you know, and that's good. And, you know, but it's just not my strength area. And what they'll find is if I'm really there for you and I have our meetings with you and all, and you don't get an A, well, we either need to give that responsibility to somebody else who can get an A, or maybe give you a job in another area. And so they also, you'll love this, they have 5 values at WD-40. And every quarterly meeting, get this, each person has to come in with a written story about how they've lived each of their 5 values. So at the end of the year, they got 20 stories on their values because the values are important. So at the end of the year, if somebody doesn't get A's and they're a values player, they want to try to find another job. If they don't get an A and not a values player, Gary has this wonderful term he uses, we will share them with the competition. And all. And so now, is that leading like Jesus? Is what they do at at Southwest Airlines, leading like Jesus, you better believe it. Colleen says, I used to talk to Jesus a lot, but I never talked a lot about Jesus until I met Blanchard, you know. And I want to tell you, if you started to look at what we're doing with Lead Like Jesus and started to implement it in your company, people are going to start coming to say, I've been watching you. And it's amazing how you behave in tough times and good times and all times and all that kind of thing. And where's that come from? And then you can give them some gospel and all, but you've earned it and all. I think a lot of times when we talk to non-Christians, we want to pull the hell card right away. And I think we ought to do is pull abundant life card and behave differently. I mean, they asked Gandhi one time if he ever thought about being a Christian. He said if he could find one. He said if all Christians would behave like Jesus, everybody in the world would want to be a Christian. I mean, we got too many Pharisees in our religion out there judging everybody. We want to love on people and not judge people. What a wonderful relaxation when you don't have to go around and pick on their sin because, man, you got a bunch of them yourself.
He said if all Christians would behave like Jesus, everyone would want to be one. And what a powerful statement. I mean, that point that he was making about the godly values and how they're lived out, that if we're living out those values, that we earn the right to have those deeper spiritual conversations with people about Jesus. And I know that that's a big piece of what happens with chaplaincy and that opportunity to pour into the lives of the people that are part of that organization and help them understand those values. So, Danica, I'd love to hear more about how that really does play out in Marketplace Chaplains.
Yeah, when I was hearing that quote and thinking about the implications in the marketplace and in companies, it really goes back to an answer of, why do companies allow us to send chaplains to the workplace? Because it does feel like such a scary thing to open the door to. But the reality is, if we are really living out what Christ has called us to do, it is to show up and just be his hands and feet and just serve and just be a listening ear and be an example of the values that a company might want their employees to be exemplifying as well. And then, like you said, you're earning the right to then share the gospel or just share truth, because the people surrounding you are really seeing just care in action. And so it might end up being that someone is able to ask you, because you've built a trusted relationship and you're sharing your own story with them and your own struggles with them, that then within the context of the workplace, someone might ask you, gosh, how are you handling your child being in the hospital? Or how are you handling having elderly parents that need to find care? They've grown to respect and trust the way that you navigate your day and your conversation, that then when hard life things come along, they're eager to ask you your how and your why. And we then can offer this perspective of hope without taking the route of entering the workplace or entering a conversation with a colleague and just pushing the gospel and pushing Jesus from the start. We earn the right. We sit back in modeling what Jesus did.
I love that that opportunity that comes when we can enter into those conversations as a result of earning that right. And it's just such an incredible platform then that we have as the Spirit opens those opportunities. And, you know, Ken had talked about, you know, even as he talked about ups and downs, those hard times when the values really become real. And he talked about in 2009 when they experienced a 25% loss in revenue and they went through all these hardships. and didn't want to let people go. That was just one of their values, that they really wanted to make sure that they cared for the people in that way. In fact, even last week, Tony Emmanuel in our episode last week was talking about the fact that he has that same perspective and he doesn't want to let people go. And so he has built in aspects of his company that just protects that value of making sure that in the downtimes he can still maintain those employees. So, you know, Ken talked about the ethics checks and things like that that are in place in order to protect those critical values. But Nelson, any moments in time where you've really had to, as you've built this company, kind of work through those strategic moments where you really see the values get real, so to speak, and the rubber meets the road, and you have to really guard and protect what those values are?
Absolutely. For us, when I think about our core values, it's how we hire, it's how we evaluate, it's what we reward based on, and frankly, it's also how we would fire. And our very first core value is to do what is right and surrender the outcome. I think you'll see integrity or do what's right as a core value in most organizations. For us, obviously, that's a big part of it, but it's that surrender the outcome piece that I think really resonates with what we heard in the video. It's to basically say, look, even when this is hard, we're still going to choose to do the right thing. And you heard them talk about, would we want this in the papers? Do we think this is fair, right? It takes it beyond just that, it's right, but it's not convenient, so we don't have to follow it. We've had situations in our organization where do what's right doesn't always just come and be obvious. And so the next thing that I think through is, 3 years from now, what decision would I be grateful that I made in this moment, right? And so that becomes kind of another lens and perspective. And there's been one instance in which that question didn't actually answer the question. And so the final question that I ended up having to kind of reach to was, what is my greatest fear if I make a decision, if I make a decision in one of these two directions? And as soon as I understood what I didn't want to become true, I knew exactly what I needed to do. And so I think often about our values come to life when we ask ourselves questions that will poke us and push us in the direction that lives that value out, right? Now, once we know the answer to the question that aligns to the value, it's so easy for us to take the next step because we understand why we're doing it.
Yeah. And that understanding of the why and getting that to permeate down through the organization. I was actually having a conversation with some other business leaders just earlier today in an FCCI group where that was the whole point of saying, I can understand those values and I can understand the why, but then how do I help make sure that it's really permeated down deep into the organization so that everyone else really gets it and really lives it out? So I'd love to hear your thoughts and just that process even of how do we go about making sure that we're helping those values really saturate down into the organization.
One thing that I have noticed is that the more that we can spend time shoulder to shoulder and not necessarily trying to address issues first off head on, but break down some of the barriers that are perhaps in the way of seeing what the values are, then getting to the root of why is this value not easy to implement for this person? What else is maybe going on in their life, or what else have they come through in their professional, personal, spiritual life that is a roadblock to this value sinking deep? We can put the values on the wall of our company or, on the desktop of our laptop, but if those words aren't landing deep and we're not able to walk through tangible examples of how we personally are living them out, then it's hard to coach it, across the desk. And so, like I said, just more shoulder to shoulder time to really break down what else is happening surrounding an issue, and then coach one another through having healthy conversations. A lot of us, and maybe Nelson, you can speak to it, of a lot of us move from role to role without really being equipped to lead or have the emotional intelligence or have a way of really wrapping our mind around the big picture, because so much of our role maybe has been task oriented, that we lose an opportunity to see other people living out those values.
Danica, I love that. One of the things that we're focused on this season of our organization is listening. You know, you go to school, they teach you about all sorts of technical things. And then, you know, they teach you how to communicate. And typically that's, you know, here's how to write a speech and here's how to write great content, emails, you know, whatever it may be. I don't remember at any point, high school, higher education, anybody stopping and saying, by the way, let me teach you how to listen and to listen well and to listen with empathy so that you can understand where somebody's coming from. And I love how you're digging into that, because until we truly understand the person that we're leading and until they have an understanding of who we are and why the values are the value or the vision is the vision and why we're going where we're going, there's only so much kind of surface level conversation. All these things that really matter happen at a lower, I'll call it a heart level. And, you know, I think the biggest part of this for those out there who are trying to say, yeah, but how do I do that? You got to create environments in which those conversations can be had. And one of the ways that we do it in this organization from the beginning that somebody walks in the door is we take time on Fridays to go through leadership content through books. Everybody who comes into this organization goes through the same four books. A couple of those are Seven Habits by Stephen Covey. Another one is The Infinite Game by Simon Sinek, and a couple others. The point of those books, though, is ultimately to take those principal foundational concepts and tie them to our values, to our vision of how we do it here, and to basically show, look, if we do this and we execute it well, if we believe these things and act in these ways, there's incredible benefit to the organization, to one another, to society, and to the marketplace. You know, we want you to not only become a great employee or a great teammate, we also want you to be a great husband or wife, a great brother or sister, a great son and daughter, and a great parent, right? As the situation allows for it. When those things happen, you show up to work fully lit up, fully alive. And you know, every single business leader is wanting to get the very best for their people so that the organization thrives. I know when I'm at my best, I do incredible work, right? And so the opportunity for me is, how can I help others show up in that way and bring those values to life, creating those opportunities for those conversations where the environment is safe for that type of questioning and so forth. That's where culture thrives. That's when the values come off the wall, and that's what gets us excited.
And I love, Nelson, how you talked earlier in your introduction about how you really see, you have a vision for saying, we're going to release these people back into the marketplace, you know, teach and train, develop, and then release them. And that's just phenomenal. We could spend a long time probably talking about the why of that, which would be so great. But I know that you've also had another example of not only how that influences culture as you release them out in the marketplace, but even while you have them and you're in that process of development and growth as a part of your business, that you're engaged in activities locally to have an impact, as Ken talked about, The Rock in San Diego and working on local issues and problems, how you guys have engaged in that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our vision is so near and dear to us. And Ken, since you touched on it, I'll give just a quick background. The vision of this place is to equip and inspire the next generation of data and technology leaders. And that idea of launching people back out into the marketplace is frankly one that came to me in a vision the day before I left my previous organization to go start this. And it was one of those that I could hardly believe of, like, so wait, you want to bring in really gifted and talented people, invest heavily in them so that they become great leaders, and then launch them back out in the marketplace. So I've never heard of that as a business strategy. And then I thought about it for about 30 more seconds and I realized, but if the goal is impact more than it is profit, then that's the greatest way to make impact. And so impact has always been at the forefront of everything that we do here. It comes before the idea of profit. And so even as a, you know, 30-something person organization, last year we partnered with the Boys and Girls Club of Metro Atlanta we fundraised for, we funded, we project managed, and then we helped to construct a playground as a part of our, what we call our big end of the year party. We do it the week before Thanksgiving as opposed to December, and we call it Thanksgiving. And so it's a 2-day event. The first day is our day of thanks, and we bring all of our people together and say thank you to them. We celebrate them. We give them gifts. We have an amazing dinner with them and their significant others. And then we come back the next day, which is the Friday, and we go and give our time, our gifts, our talents to the community to create an impact for the next generation. And so what we did last year was to go build this playground. And it was amazing to just see all that come to fruition. It ended up being a whole bunch more work than we had planned for and anticipated for a handful of reasons. But ultimately, getting to the top of that mountain made it that much sweeter. This year, we're working with an organization called Hands on Atlanta to do STEM kits for an inner city school in Metro Atlanta. And it's a long-term partnership that we're excited about. So it's continuing to find ways to invest in that next generation that needs that impact. And we want to do it because not, you know, yes, we believe that there's a long-term business sense, but really we prioritize that impact over everything else.
And Danica, I know that that's so true with chaplaincy, that really is at the core of everything, that ability to pour into people, develop them, have them be everything that God's intended them to be. So no matter where they are, they flourish and they do well. And even the idea of, you know, one kingdom-oriented business, how it influences other kingdom-oriented businesses and allows that mission of influencing the world for Christ, that's the FCCI mission, by the way, how we can really truly transform the world for Christ, one company leader at a time. And just your thoughts on how that fleshes out in the marketplace through the work that you do.
Yeah, well, I think that one of the beautiful things that I have seen in action is the reality that a chaplain care service within a company isn't just for the employees. It is for their loved ones. It is for neighbors to the business. It is to, you know, their suppliers. If someone is in crisis, we will show up and we will care for them. And through that, you really get to see an amazing impact on someone realizing, wow, my company cares for me enough to send someone to visit my mom 2 states away and let me know how she's doing because she's in the hospital. And now I have this bond with this person who cares and gave up their day to go help my extended family member. And then as you're developing those relationships and seeing the things that they care about in the community, that's where then company leaders really have an opportunity to take that vision of generosity to a whole nother level, where they say, we're not only going to care for you and your family's emotional, mental, spiritual needs, but we want to know, what do you care about in the community? And we want to invest in that. We want to do these creative service projects, or we want to have our company tithe to help organizations that you care about. Like, all of those layers that we have an opportunity to pour into really allow us to see these things become real. And we get to see needs being met on a local level, like we're talking about. And so I love that as a conversation piece for companies to lean into somehow learning, what do your people care about? Because if you show them that you want to tie yourself to equipping them to be generous, you know, they're the chances of them sticking with you and not leaving for somewhere else, you know, really increase if you can create that type of caring culture.
Ken, I'd love to add to that on a conversation that you and I had leading into this. And one of the things you and I chatted about was, you know, with millennials and Gen Z coming into the marketplace and being a part of that work culture, we had a conversation on what is most important to this segment of the population. And what I can share with you is what Danica just shared is what I feel I see time and time again as the thing that is a differentiator for people of this kind of generation. They want to know that I'm more than a number, that I matter, that I'm seen, that I'm heard, right? And Danica, I love just how you shared the heart of that. And what I would encourage the listeners with is, as you try to engage this next generation that's coming, it's these themes that they care about so deeply, and they care about it. You know, I think every human being wants that care and wants that attention, but this has become something that is, I think, really near and dear. Do you see me, and do you understand what I care about? And am I more than a number to you? And giving a service like what Danica is describing, I think is an incredible gift and an incredible way to show that empathy and that care. I do see you. I want to create an opportunity for you. I want to meet your needs.
We'll enjoy more conversation with Christian business leaders just like you on our next episode. So be sure to let others know about the Pathway to Purpose podcast. And do check out FCCI.org, where you can find leadership devotionals, submit prayer requests, join an FCCI leadership group, and become part of the free FCCI Connect community. Until next time, may God encourage your journey as you lead a company for Christ.